Yeah, I mean, you also have a backdrop that makes you look like a
Don't judge
child
me. Don't
staging a
judge
play
me.
for your parents, but we're good.
I was
Welcome
going
to
to
for
Highly
more of a
Questionable.
hospital
I'm Dan
room.
Lebatard. This is a real flea market version of television we're doing around here. Worldwide leader in sports, baby, and a towel from Pablo's house. Let's do Pablo Torre, Mina Kimes. Let's get started. Don't say anything.
This,
don't say anything.
it's a bed sheet.
Do you think that the Big Ten Unity Group will affect the start of their season in a month?
All right. I'm more interested in all of the macro going on here because I can't answer for you whether anyone's going to be able to play in a month or not. But rarely do you get during a pandemic these kinds of evolutions that we're getting where people are realizing on Zoom, for example, that business can be done entirely differently. And Men's Wearhouse is realizing, oh, no, bankruptcy because no one needs suits anymore. Here in the NCAA, you are seeing the players realize in real time, oh, wait a minute. This is a business transaction. They are asking us to risk our health and our physical bodies here, and we deserve money for this. They're realizing this because of the pandemic. They're realizing because of what they're being asked to do. And I hope when all of this goes away that these guys can continue down this path because it's all been laid bare. This is a huge business transaction. We are asking for these bodies to harm themselves in exchange for money, and they want some of the money, and all of us can see it plainly. They deserve some of the money if we're going to ask them to do this, because look at what baseball's doing. They'll field 18 anybodies for the Marlins because they want to get to the money. It's been laid bare, all of it. And in amateurism, they've realized, no, give us ours now. We deserve it.
Around the same time that I saw this letter from the Big Ten players, I saw another letter from the NCAA to college athletic leaders laying out some guidelines for the 2020 season, including a system for reporting violations without retribution, a ban on liability waivers, which is a real thing college athletics programs are trying to do, and a requirement that if a student athlete does opt out this season, their scholarship won't be waived. All of this is very good. It's also woefully insufficient and incredibly late. It is August, and this is happening. And that is why these players and the Pac-12 players are making these demands, because amidst a total deficit of adult leadership, you've got 18 and 19 year olds stepping into the void, speaking up, trying to protect their own health. I find that incredibly inspiring and also incredibly depressing at the same time. Too much is riding on these kids right now, which they know for the colleges not to bow to at least some of these demands in order to get a season and get their money.
But that lateness by the adults, Mina, is why I think we can answer the question that Dan neglected at the very top of this segment, which is this isn't going to happen in a month. It's very hard, impossible to imagine. Like, the NCAA has long been that friend where you text them and you're like, where are you? And they say, on my way, and they haven't even gotten to the shower yet. And all of these players know that. That is true of name, image, and likeness stuff. That is true of all the issues you mentioned. And that is true of the safety protocols. So all of these young men, some of them teenagers, they are using the pandemic, to Dan's point, to organize. I talked to two UCLA players on ESPN Daily today, and they said explicitly, if this pandemic did not exist, because they have the opportunity now to actually coordinate and get on these video calls, if it didn't exist, this probably wouldn't have happened. And what they get to do now is actually exchange notes. They know that Stanford, for instance, has way stronger protocols than they do at other schools. And that's not something that they want to accept because they fear for their lives as well. And so the fact that they're on these Zoom calls and that they have a group chat with hundreds of people, they said 400 young men are on a group chat. Just think about that level of human organization in general, let alone in college, to pull that kind of a feat off.
I know that people always object in 2020 to the idea that college football would feel like a plantation. But when you get the language that you got out of Clemson, out of Iowa, in terms of overlords telling bodies and language that is abusive, hey, this is how you have to run for us. This is how you have to work for us. And you hear the reports at Washington State of players being denied food. And you see the allegations at Colorado State where they're being asked reportedly to work around the protocols and disguise the disease. You are seeing at Colorado State, where they have not played a meaningful down of football in about 30 years. Colorado State is treating its players this way. You see it all naked. And this is the thing about what's happening right now. The players see it too. They see it clearly. And with power, this is how they fight back.
A group chat with 400 people is my worst nightmare. It's almost as bad as terrifying. A group chat with Dan Le Batard, where you get texts from him at 3 a.m. after not hearing from him for 3 weeks, but somehow even worse.
Imagine.
Mina, I did like the skinny arm segment on Brandon Ingram. I'm sorry I didn't get back to you. I enjoyed that the Big League wrote that up.
You're telling me on television that you're responding to
a text.
Yeah,
I should have texted you back, but you've been complaining about the 3 a.m. text, and that's when I text people back.
But now I know that Mina also takes the time to text Dan to fish for compliments about segments on this television show. So that's good to know.
How concerned should the NFL be about Matt Stafford's false positive COVID-19 test?
How concerned should everyone in sports be about the first false positive that we've seen where we're like, well, wait a minute, when did those start happening in sports in a way that would put people on a COVID list, but not really because they're not actually positive? Matt Stafford's wife, who has been to hell and back, that family has been to hell and back in terms of sickness, is really mad at the NFL and others because now their name is stained by this. The kids are being bullied like pariahs at the playground. The whole thing is ugly and a human way in an NFL and pandemic way. Of course, if the information we're getting is not accurate, that's a dilution that none of us need because the information we already have is scary and damning enough.
When we first started hearing the names of players who tested positive over the summer and they were upset their names were getting out, I was kind of confused, right? Because we're talking about a sport where if a quarterback gets a paper cut on his finger, we find out within an hour. This is something they're very used to. But as Kelly Stafford makes very clear in her story, COVID is different from a cut on a finger, a normal injury, insofar as it is incredibly contagious. So when a player tests positive, that diagnosis has ramifications not only for the player, but everyone around him, his family. So while I understand and believe Kelly Stafford when she says this has been terrible, I also believe that there's not a lot the NFL can do here other than hoping, praying that there are fewer false positives going forward and doing their absolute best to make it clear when the tests are incorrect in order to stop things like this from happening.
Yeah, it's just another way, Mina, in which the pandemic is exploding our norms in sports. Only in sports do I know the intimate details of Matt Stafford's medical bills and his medical history. I know that he is making a certain amount of money every year. I know that, for instance, last year he had a fractured tailbone. I don't know that about any other person in a comparable celebrity position in America. But the reason we need to know this stuff allegedly is because of gambling. That's the reason the NBA has been struggling with this, where they have a policy where if the player doesn't want to disclose a positive diagnosis, they won't release it to the public, which means that certain games have been taken off the board because gamblers don't really know what to bet on, what's going on here. But in the NFL, the idea of false positivity being a thing that undermines the sport. I mean, if there is a title for the movie about this football season, with all of the hollow optimism, it is false positive. Because I don't know if any of the things we're even speculating about are going to come to pass because we may not have a season at all.
What a terrible title for a movie, false positive. Like, Pablo's got no future in naming movies. False positive. I don't want to watch that.
In a world.
And that is
where Dan Le Batard stops bullying his panelists.
True negative, the Dan Le Batard.
We needed an ending. I thought you were giving us a comedic ending and you just yammered for 3 minutes about gambling.
Coming up next on my son's TV show.
And the fact is, the guy is shooting fewer shots per game than he has in his entire life, despite playing about 33 minutes a game. So this is all stuff that was incomprehensible to me. And I just appreciate Melo not roasting me on Twitter yet, because that was something that he absolutely should be doing to everybody.
Do we all owe Melo an apology?
I feel like everyone watching this right now, everyone, None of you were behind Melo while we were all laughing at him. Our most decorated international champion, a guy who was a freshman at Syracuse and won a championship as one of the great college players of all time. A guy who has had a Hall of Fame basketball career, and it wasn't a ridiculous thing to ask in his draft, hey, who would you rather have, Carmelo Anthony or LeBron James? But because he hasn't done any real winning beyond going deep into the Western Conference as the number one guy on the Denver Nuggets, we've spent a lot of time laughing at him. And now look at what he's doing against Houston late in games, moves the game back behind the three-point line, hits a dagger three as skinny Melo. There wasn't anybody, Pablo, on this train. You're a Knicks fan. You have laughed at Melo for many, many years. This has been a great player for a long time, and nobody was silent when there was an opportunity to laugh at him.
Dan, Melo went on First Take and sat Frost Nixon style in front of Stephen A. Smith and basically objected to the way we've all been covering him. And in the end, he was right and I was spectacularly wrong. And I was wrong because I didn't think he would do this, let alone could, right? The could, I think, was something that I said confidently, but the would, I mean, that's what's so impossible to consider. The idea that Carmelo Anthony, Dan, after really hating playing power forward for the Knicks, has been playing out of the post and played power forward for most of the season. He's doing that down low now, which has unlocked him. He has lost a ton of weight and looks amazing. Like those propaganda workout videos, it turns out, actually were rooted in a certain truth. And the fact is, the guy is shooting fewer shots per game than he has in his entire life, despite playing about 33 minutes a game. So this is all stuff that was incomprehensible to me. And I just appreciate Melo not roasting me on Twitter yet, because that was something that he absolutely should be doing to everybody.
Oh, please. If you are watching this show right now, at Carmelo Anthony and then at Pablo Torre, and
no,
tell him
why would you roast him
into oblivion, because Pablo was wrong and Dan is right. We were all wrong. We weren't entirely wrong, okay? If you said Carmelo Anthony was not good at basketball in recent years, you were right. That is a factual appraisal of reality. I mean, when he was in Houston, they were negative 15 when he was on the floor. That is real. That happened. But if you also said he is done, he is over, he's got no shot, clearly you were incorrect. He has proven to be quite useful for Portland. And I just love the fact that amidst all the exciting young teams and come from behind storylines in the NBA, everybody's favorite Cinderella story right now is a guy in his mid-30s who's made $300 million and was once memed for wearing an all-fur outfit in the locker room. That is an underdog story I can get behind. He is an inspiration to people in their mid-30s who are afraid of being washed everywhere.
So we're talking about all the people Melo is now inspiring in their washedness, but LeBron is really good. Chris Paul, really good. Melo, right now, really good. The only guy in the banana boat left is Dwayne Wade. And I have to imagine Dwayne Wade is watching television at home right now, his knees creaking, his neck hurting, and he's thinking, it's time. Get me a contract right now.
I mean, the Lakers have Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith. They've got those guys off of the scrap heap. Let's go. Let's put him on the Lakers. Let's put him outside the bubble waiting for somebody to test positive so Dwayne Wade can get in there and just, you know, make it a magical story at Disney World.
But in fairness to one Gary Trent Jr., like we've been talking all this noise about how good Melo is now, Gary Trent Jr. playing alongside Carmelo Anthony, 60% from three, has more threes than anybody else in the bubble. And did he get a segment on Highly Questionable's A Block? Absolutely not. So Gary Trent Jr., I see you if no one else does.
Melo, it's at Pablo Torre, okay? He is working in front of a bed sheet right now if you need material to roast him for being broke.
Also, subscribe to ESPN Daily, Carmelo. It's good.
Yes, subscribe to ESPN Daily for the guy who starts commentary with the phrase, in fairness to Gary Trent Jr., when we're talking about Melo.
Do you question if the Rockets are the reason the Nets beat the Bucks?
All right, we're about to show you some video and some audio from Garrett Temple, who is wearing a mask. And I believe that the Brooklyn Nets, all of them, should play wearing masks, because I wouldn't recognize any of them if they were wearing masks or not wearing masks. I don't know who plays for the Nets, but last night they were playing the Bucks, and they were a 19.5-point underdog. There has not been an underdog that has won a game as that big an underdog since 1993. And here's Garrett Temple explaining how they did it.
It's honestly, you know, we stay in the same hotel as the Houston Rockets, and we talked to them by the pool yesterday, and we told them we'll play Milwaukee and ask them a few things that they did. So that they beat them. You know, obviously they're very undersized. That's how they play. And you know, they gave us a few tips, and we took that to heart.
I mean, keep laughing. Like, what kind of analysis is that?
I mean, I just love the idea of, I don't know, Russell Westbrook sitting by the pool and being like, all right, guys, here is the key to beating the Bucks. Make sure Giannis doesn't play in the second half. Also, Chris Middleton, ensure that he also does not play in the second half, and you shall have a victory.
How is this not taped? I just want footage of that interaction, Mina, because I have long said, we've all said, the NBA is the best reality show. Here we have their real world house, and we don't have cameras around this pool. We don't have cameras catching James Harden floating by on a pool noodle, telling Garrett Temple, you know, a million threes isn't cool. You know what's cool? A billion threes. Why don't we have that? Because they shot like 50-something threes last night, and that's the reason why this all happened.
Giannis Antetokounmpo had scored more points this season than the entire Nets active roster. Actually, more than 500 points more.
Again, okay, so let's play this game. Pablo Torre fancies himself an NBA expert. Go ahead, Pablo. Name all the Nets you can name, because I don't know who the hell was playing for them yesterday.
I just want Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot. If you're out there at home watching this show, go on Twitter, at Mina Kimes, roast her. Roast her for not acknowledging your existence, Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, a person that I definitely knew this entire time.
That is unfair, because he is far more likely to do that than Carmelo Anthony.
It also is a wonderful trick Pablo just did right there, where he named the one net he read about this morning.
There are others.
He says ambiguously.
Do you question if it's easy to hit buzzer beaters over Paul George?
Okay, this is so uncommonly unfair, because Paul George in both of these instances is basically playing defense as well as any athletic human being could ever play defense. Look at how close in these two instances he is to guarding this, and it tells you how great these basketball players are. Because look at what Damian Lillard does when Paul George is doing everything right here last year, and it doesn't matter because he's Damian Lillard.
Long range three.
Like, he's right in his face. And now with Devin Booker, this happens last night. And Paul George is on him, but Devin Booker is going to make this every once in a while.
Have it. Six to play. Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow.
I mean, come on.
He's there. That's Kawhi, too. That's both of them. Booker. Both of them are there.
Right there.
All that matters is the result. This is why, look, I stand on my lonely mountaintop and I tell people to trust processes, because Paul George can do everything right, but all that matters is the result. You could have a guy wide open. If he misses that three to win the game, that clip does not make this television show or any other television show, because we live in a results-oriented society, depressingly so. So, trust the process. This is what I've been trying to say this entire time.
Oh, stop. All Paul George needs to do is consult with Russell Westbrook via pool, who will tell him, hey, man, all you got to do, the key to beating the Blazers, make sure Damian Lillard doesn't play. The key to beating the Phoenix Suns, Devin Booker doesn't play. That's all it takes. That is the key to basketball.
Starting tomorrow, the first major of the year, the PGA Championship.
All right, so golf should be able to pull some of this stuff off, right? It shouldn't be that hard with all of the spacing in golf, should it? Well, let's see some of the best players in the world during a practice round. The producers are telling me some of the best players in the world did what during a practice round? Oh, this is not the best players in the world. This is just a ridiculous montage of golf here. Highly questionable video. Yeah, that guy, it's stuck in his tongue.
Oh, I hate this one.
You can hear that? You're allowed to hear that.
Yes. Oh, yes, this is also a...
Where is the club involved here?
Well, you'll see it's coming. It's making an appearance right about now. This is a good video. Yes, this is pretty pretty good. All of it out. This last one's going to hurt on the knee. That concludes our golf coverage here at Highly Questionable. Pablo, are you intrigued?
Yeah, they need to use that actual music for the PGA. I think that's a good production tip they can take away from this program.
I don't know what's cheaper, your backdrop or our music budget. Mina, are you intrigued?
I just love that at a moment when we're finally getting real sports back, right? And we actually have original footage to show that the producers of Highly Questionable are leaning on a montage. We have run, oh my God, Pablo, yes, what are you
way
doing?
Way too many times, way too many times. All right, people, if you want more Pablo Torre, ESPN Daily, as he mentions every time he's on here. If you want more Mina Kime, Mina Kime Show featuring Lenny, that's her dog. Find it wherever you find your podcasts.
Oh, I should have watched this.
I'm done.